Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast.
We are one church that meets in various locations across Greater Manchester.
For more information about who we are or where we meet,
please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
We're going to look at Isaiah 9 today, the beginning section. This is a section that we will know well from the Christmas story. It's the pointing towards the birth of Jesus as the Redeemer of Israel. But it's not just a Christmas story. It's integral to who we are as Christians. So we're going to look at that in a minute. But before we do, I want to tell you a bit about how some of my week is structured, how some of my day is structured. I like to look at the news. In the morning, it will be one of the first things I do is to read the news headlines. And then throughout the day, I've got all the different apps on my phone that give me all the different alerts. The sport, the politics, the social news, war, all of that kind of stuff is coming through my phone. And then on top of that, I quite like listening to podcasts. So there's a few topics I listen to that interest me. So I'm getting bombarded with news. And reflecting on it this week, engaging with our news today in contemporary Britain, especially in 2024, is not good for our well-being, right? Everything is distressing, both domestic, international, and frankly, it's just a bit miserable. So I was thinking about the stories I've read just this week. We've seen tensions in the Middle East escalate. We've seen Israel and Iran basically come to blows, and that's a worrying situation. I read an article that the crisis in Sudan has reached an epic proportion where 8.6 million people are currently refugees. That's incredible. There's huge human suffering and displacement. And then closer to home, we've got the UK government's proposed cuts to disability benefits, austerity measures aimed at the most vulnerable people in society. There's a shortfall in nursery places for those of you that have children. Loads of families just can't find childcare for their kids, and that's causing additional cost and it's limiting people's opportunities. And then we look at the economy, and inflation is stubbornly high. Interest rates are really elevated compared to what they have been in the last few years, maybe not overall historically. We're trying to buy a house at the moment, and we've been really crunching those numbers, and they are hard numbers to deal with. And within our city itself, there's visible signs of social distress. I was reading and seeing pictures, and I was walking through town because my office is right by there, of the homeless camp that's kind of been kind of just there outside the City Hall. There's 50 people a night sleeping in tents outside our City Hall in this city, and more across the city in different places. And if you go through Levenshulme, you're going to see fly tipping and dumping and things that make our life less good and less positive. And even more mundane, on the journey to church this morning, we hit a pothole. Not a big pothole, but a pothole nonetheless. The roads are crap. So this is despair, right? And there are these really disheartening realities around us. I'm not going to be despairing all the way through. Don't worry, we're going to pick up a little bit because we don't know. We're going to talk about Jesus. There might well be a happy cat story. We'll see. But it's actually really easy to find ourselves becoming disheartened by all of these things, right? When I read out that incredible list of things that are going wrong in our society today, actually, you do feel a bit sad. You do feel hurt. And that is what we're being bombarded with and fed with. And it's easy to become powerless, feel disillusioned, actually feel like those challenges are insurmountable. In short, when we read or watch the news or look at the world, we can see that it's broken and pained. And if anything, it seems to be getting worse. We're in a gloomy Britain. And I don't know about you, but I feel like that mood is hovering over the nation and has been for a while. I was trying to work out, if I looked at kind of big news stories throughout the last 20 years, which years were dominated by positive news stories. And that is rare most of the time. But it seems like 2012, we had all this Olympics news and it really dominated for months and months and months. And we were amazed by how many people volunteered, how well the England team did, the UK team did for those of you who are specific about these things. That was the last time that we had months of positive news stories. And I really did look through the news to try and find that time. So from 2012 to 2014, we've been dominated by negativity and tough times. And when we go through those tough times, it's easy to feel like we're facing particularly deep struggles, or maybe even believe actually that things won't get better, that we are forever cursed. And when we look at the story of the Bible, actually we see this as a pattern throughout history. Ancient Israel and Judah, they had it rough for a really long time, much longer than we have, much longer than we will have, most likely. Much longer than a hard year or a hard decade. They had centuries and centuries of detachment from God, of war and famine, of hurt and pain. Because God had made a special agreement, a covenant with them, offering to be their God if they followed him. And instead of sticking to their end of the deal, they kept messing up, turning away from God. And that led them down a bad path. They had to face the consequence of their actions, and the nation even split into two. They became Israel and Judah. And God had done basically everything he could to stop that happening. He'd sent prophets and leaders to set them straight, and yet they kept ignoring those messages and turning away. Things got so bad in the kingdom of Judah that they started sacrificing their own children. That's the story of King Ahaz in 2 Kings 16. The king burns his own son to death, hoping that somehow it would please God. And even in the midst of this chaos and disobedience, God doesn't give up on them. He sends those messages again and again through the prophets, hoping that they would turn to him and find their way. But they keep ignoring him and they're sinking deeper into trouble. And it's a reminder for us that actually we can sink deeper, but there is always hope because God wants to offer us hope. And at this incredible low point for the Jewish people, Andy talked a bit about this last week, God allows a new superpower to rise up. I don't know about you, but when I think about superpowers of the ancient world, I default to the ones that we learned about in primary and secondary school, right? I think of the Romans, maybe the Greeks. They've got the cool weapons and the cool hats and all of that kind of stuff. Sometimes I think of the Vikings, who weren't really an empire, but again, cool hats. And so those are the ones that stick in your head. But actually, there was an earlier superpower than all of those. You had the Assyrians. And we don't talk about them much, and I think that's because they never kind of came to this part of the world, and our history kind of ignores it. But the Assyrians ruled for 500 years over much of the Middle East. It was a proper empire. And they pioneered things that were brand new at the time. They were the first people to have a fully professional salaried army. That allowed them to fight year-round, and they came up with logistics and policies that would sustain themselves. And most armies had to stop in the wintertime. And even more armies had to stop during the harvest because everyone in the army was a farmer or a shepherd. That isn't very conducive for winning battles. But the Assyrians had come up with this idea of, why don't we just pay people to be in the army and then we can conquer everyone around us? And it worked. If they came against you, you would find they were better trained, better equipped. And once they brought the fight to you, it would never stop. Andy mentioned last week that their previous siege had taken 3 years, but they've committed to it and won it. And the mood is low for the Jewish people because now the Assyrians' eyes have been turned to Israel. They've turned their eyes to the land of Judah and Israel, and as the northern kingdom, Israel will be conquered first. So Israel sees this rising threat, and instead of doing what I would hope we'd do, but we often don't do, and turn to God, ask for his help, they have a great idea. Let's reach out to one of our neighbours and form an alliance against the Assyrians. Problem solved. Let's combine our countries and throw our part-time farmer armies against the greatest nation in the world. And then they do the maths and they realise, actually, the two of us, we can't compete. So they go to Judah and say, can you join us? Then we can fight the Assyrians. And Judah, looking at the strength of the Assyrians, says, actually, no, not interested in any of that. Don't want the fight. And these countries, Israel and their ally, turn their wrath against Judah, bringing their armies against them to force the Judeans to go to war with the Assyrians. Did Judah cry out for help at this point to God? No, they cry out to the Assyrians. This is like a guinea pig making an alliance with a dog against a cat. It's kind of asking, hey, why don't we get along? And the dog says, sure thing, come a bit closer to me. And that's exactly what happens here. This is how geopolitics works, right? It's exactly like dogs and cats. And this kind of inherent thing that the Judeans were looking at the problem in front of themselves and trying to find the short-term solution that would eliminate it, right? But they build themselves bigger depth, bigger problems, bigger distress for the future. God looks at all that and he knows what's happening. He sees the disaster. And in Isaiah 8, verse 21, it says of the Jewish people, they will go from one place to another, weary and hungry. And because they are hungry, they will rage and curse their king and God. They will look up to the heaven and down at earth, but wherever they look, there will be trouble and anguish and despair. And they will be thrown out into the darkness. I actually think that feels like how our nation feels at the moment. Despairing, lacking in hope. In this picture, Israel is in complete spiritual, economic, personal, political collapse. Everywhere they look is disaster. And you're seeing a nation without hope, without beyond rescue, completely rejecting God. And in that rejection of God, you see the total despair, you see the emptiness, and yet they're refusing to do anything about it. It's easy for us to see the measure of damage, the brokenness around us, and assume there will never be a better day. That there's no doubt that that's where Israel and Judah were. And at the end of Isaiah 8, you're thinking, what can be done for these people? The most powerful force in history is against them coming to destroy their cities. Is there any hope? And that brings us to where we are today. We're going to be in chapter 9, verse 2 of Isaiah. So if you want to turn to me, that would be great. Otherwise, do we have it on the board? That'd be great. Thank you, Stuart. Thank you, Ramiro. That's fantastic. Cool. It says in verse 2, the people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine. You will enlarge the nation of Israel, and its people will rejoice. They will rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, and like warriors dividing the plunder. For you will break the yoke of their slavery and lift the heavy burden from their shoulders. You will break the oppressor's rod, just as you did when you destroyed the city, the army of Midian. The boots of the warrior and the uniforms bloodstained by war will all be burned. They will be fuel for the fire. God observes his people, witnessing how greatly they've been diminished, seeing the depths of their sin and the extent to which they have become broken. He's understanding, he's seeing their plight. He's seeing they're in darkness, that they're gloomy and despaired. And they've got there because they've turned their back on him. However, God was not finished with his people. He determined that to deliver the people that he cares deeply about and wants to know and love, he's got to do something about it. Despite their betrayal of him, he's going to do a new thing that they don't deserve. God remains steadfast in his resolve to know his people. And that's the way that God is with us today. He's extending his compassion to us over and over again, not but because we deserve it, but because it is his character. It says that there's going to be great light for the people walking in darkness. I really love that. In deep darkness, a light will shine. And I don't know about you, but if I'm cleaning out an old space, so at the moment, like I said, we're thinking of moving house, so we've been going through old boxes and working out what we have and what we don't have. And sometimes when you're going through things, you find something you don't remember you have. So for me the other day, I found a bunch of cards that Abby and I had written each other early on in our relationship. And they're really disgusting. and they are really disgusting. They're gross, right? Like, early in a relationship, you really like each other, you really love each other, you write yourselves these sweet notes. If you still do that, that's great, and you should keep doing that because it's very nice. But I was having a look at some of these and thinking, wow, that is so special. It means nothing to anybody else, but to me, that unexpected find has great value and is a bit of a treasure. The people of Israel weren't expecting to find treasure. God gave it to them in the unexpected. And God says, I'm going to deliver the people of Israel. And to prove that he can do it, to prove that he's going to do it, he points to the past. He reminds them through Isaiah that he has defeated the Midianites. And that's the story from the judge Gideon. Gideon was raised up to lead an army of just 300 men. 300 ordinary people who sought after the heart of God. And with those men, the entire Midian army, thousands and thousands of people, was destroyed, and Israel was liberated and free. And God in this prophecy is pointing to the fact that I have done it before, and if I've done it before, I can do it again. And that's the promise that he's making. He's renewing a promise to his people through this prophecy. Not because he's forgotten, but because they have. And I think we forget. We forget the promises that God has made. That God will deliver his people. That we will live with him for eternity. That we will know his favor. That we will feast with him in the heavenly place. That we will worship and rejoice forever. Those are all promises that God made. And it's going to happen. And so Isaiah promises, well, God promises through Isaiah that one day in the future, the way that God is going to do this is he's going to raise up a new type of king. The kings they've had have been terrible. Ahaz, who has sacrificed his own son, burning him to death. Andy spoke a bit about King Uzziah dying because he had violated the sacred place in the temple. He had risen beyond the stature God had given him and sought after being in the place of the Holy of Holies. And had died for it. These kings, these earthly kings, are broken and flawed and cannot deliver salvation against the Assyrians or anyone else. And one day, God is going to raise up a new king. A new king is needed, and that king has to be unlike any other king that has ever existed. Verse 6 says, "For us a child is born, a son is given to us. The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. His government and its peace will never end. He will rule with fairness and justice from the throne of his ancestor David for all eternity. The passionate commitment of the Lord of Heaven's armies will make this happen." God is looking into their situation, and he looks at the nation of Israel. And he leads Isaiah to look into the future and says, in the future, there's going to be a baby born, not just born, but given. There's something important in that. Born and given, not one or the other, human and divine. Something different is going to happen. We, of course, know that moment as Christmas, and we use these verses so much around Christmas time. They're beautiful verses. The nature of God, the nature of Jesus, predicted hundreds, thousands of years before Jesus came. But these are not just Christmas verses. They're integral to who we are and who God is. And Isaiah doesn't just look into the future and see their future as Israel, but our future as followers of the way, as followers of Jesus. He sees the day that the government will be on the shoulders of Jesus Christ. The king who is both fully God and fully human. When we look at our government today, whether it's the Conservatives or Labour, they cannot meet the standard of a government on the shoulders of Jesus Christ. That would be life-changing, world-changing, different. And that's what we're promised. That's the future. When Jesus rules, he's going to rule like nobody else. And his name is Wonderful Counselor. The one that can hold all the authority of government is also a wonderful counselor. And I don't know about you, but have you ever had a moment in your life where you're really stuck? Maybe you're in real trouble, you've made some bad decisions, or maybe you're just kind of run down and empty. And someone comes along and gives you a piece of advice that is game-changing. It just speaks into that situation. It's godly. It changes something. It changes how you're acting. Everything that Jesus brings is that. Everything that Jesus brings is transformational. He is our wonderful counselor. And I'm sure we can all attest to moments in our life where actually when we've listened to the word of Jesus, something has changed. When we've understood it, when we've taken it on board, when we've gone, actually, Jesus, what you are bringing me is right and good and true, something changes. The God who changes nations and rules them changes our hearts, changes our souls, changes our lives. That's who we get to worship. We get to worship a mighty God, a wonderful counselor. And he's with us. He is God with us. And I love these verses. It says, he himself will be mighty God, everlasting Father. He and the Father are one and the same. It's the beauty of the Godhead that our Father is in Christ himself. He is God with us. And it paints a picture not of division that we see in our world, but complete unity. Where we're going, what we have hope in, is a place of complete unity, complete jointness with God. And that will last forever. His rule will last forever. His reign will be forever. He alone is our peace. And isn't that so beautiful that we can be so divided and the Prince of Peace is there for us? When we're affected by illness, when poverty is rising around us and maybe affecting us, when the weight of people hurting is overwhelming, maybe we try jumping from solution to solution to solution, or maybe we drown it out, maybe we ignore it. Maybe you're scrolling your TikTok and your Instagram and watching shows on Netflix because it's easier not to look at the problem. But actually, we get to come to the source of peace. Our politics isn't going to solve it. Our circumstances aren't going to change all of their own. The Prince of Peace is where we can find refuge. Amen. Thank you, Andy. And I want to challenge us that actually when things are difficult, we still look at the horizon. Because I think when things are difficult, we tend to look down. We tend to go, I can't see where I'm going, so I'm going to look at the step in front of me. And actually, you stop seeing the obstacles coming, right? You stop preparing yourself, changing your path, listening when you're not looking ahead. So that's kind of where I want us to think about and land today, this idea of looking upward towards God, trusting him, seeing and knowing him as a wonderful counselor, mighty God, everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Because I think when we do that, our perspective, our horizon rises. I think when we know who God is and we fix our eyes on him, we have hope and faith. We believe things can change, and actually we can start to make things change because we know who we're trusting in it for. And I think, honestly, that's why we worship, right? We worship so that our eyes can be lifted towards the heavens, so that we can sing with heavenly armies and angels. There's that picture in Revelation of the angels singing around the throne. And when we worship, when we sing, which Jamie's going to lead us in, so, you know, you can start twiddling if you want. Actually, we join with those heavenly angelic armies that are singing. I love that in these verses, it says that the passionate commitment of the Lord of Heaven's armies is going to make this happen. The Lord of Heaven's armies is going to come and change the world. But when we see the picture of Revelation, they are worshiping. Worship is what changes the world. Worship is what changes our hearts. It's what lifts us towards heaven.
Thanks for listening.
To explore this sermon or learn more about our church, please navigate to the links provided in this podcast description.
From there, you can connect with us on social media. And you're welcome to check out the music links featured in this episode from our very own musicians.
You can also discover current events and information about where we meet on Sundays and various groups or community projects that you can join in with.
If you're interested in knowing more about us or wish to join us for one of our meetings, please reach out.
Simply drop us an email at hello@ccm.org.uk.
We look forward to connecting with you.